Good evening. Welcome to the second hour, first edition here on WEAA 88.9. I'm Sean Yost, your host, editor of the Baltimore Afro-American newspaper. Thank you for sticking with us or joining us for our second hour on this rainy Tuesday. Support for WEAA traffic and MTA report is provided by ADT. More information available at ADT.com. Coming up a little bit later in the second hour, well, in this whole hour, we're talking about film, avant-garde film, rare film, beautiful film. In the second hour of First Edition, we'll be joined by Brother Marco Johnson. He's a martial arts instructor, but he's a filmmaker and actor as well. The film is called The Legend of Kung Funk, filming in the Baltimore area. I can't wait to hear what that is all about. That's coming up a little bit later. In our second hour, we'll talk to Marco Johnson about that. But before we get to Marco Johnson, our friend Eric Hatch from the Parkway Theater and the Maryland Film Festival is here. Eric is director of programming, and he is a Baltimore filmmaker as well. Eric, welcome back to the show.
Oh, thanks for having me back.
Well, it's always a pleasure. You know I love talking about film. Before we get to work, Eric, I'm going to remind our listeners to make sure to follow us on Twitter at First Edition 88.9. And don't forget to like and follow us on Facebook at First Edition on WEAA 88.9 FM. Go to WEAA.org on our homepage for the latest podcast of First Edition or subscribe to our iTunes podcast, First Edition. Also, hit me up on my personal Twitter account. The tag is at Sean Yost. That is my name, S-E-A-N-Y-O-E-S. Or go to my Facebook page. If you have information, insight, or breaking news you want to share with me, I will share it with the people unless you don't want me to. And, of course, I will not. Now, back to Eric Hatch of the Parkway Theater. Got a couple of films we want to talk about, Eric.
Yeah.
The second one is one that fascinated me from the time I saw it. I didn't see it, but I saw the, not a clip of it, but the advertisement for it. And mm-hmm. I wanted to see it. I didn't get to, but we're going to get that a little bit later. But this film, Davion, is one that's playing at the Parkway. Is that this Thursday?
No, it opens up on the 15th. So
okay.
2 weeks off now.
All right.
Yeah.
So Davion,
yeah.
Tell us about Davion. What's this film about?
Davion is a film that premiered at Sundance this year and is just making its way into theaters now. It's directed by Aman Abbasi, and it's a portrait of it's a coming-of-age story in a black community in Arkansas where a 13-year-old, the main character, Davion, loses his brother, who's his role model and father figure, to violence.
Okay.
And in coping with that, his sister's boyfriend kind of steps up to help him, but he's got competing role models in the neighborhood who are sort of pulling him into more violent choices, and he's sort of torn between the two. And the film is sort of lyrically shot, so aesthetics are really important in the film. But as far as its narrative content, it's about processing loss, it's about family, and it's about making a new family when your nuclear family suffers a loss.
Hmm. It's a film that has familiar themes. The coming of age story is always one that can be incredibly profound. This one sounds interesting, especially the fact, you know, that it's shot or the backdrop is this rural Arkansas town.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that a little bit, because that's an interesting dynamic, especially for – this is an American film, right?
It is, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It is an interesting dynamic, that setting for an American film about a young black man, 13-year-old coming-of-age story.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things that sets this film apart is its sense of place. And, you know, it draws from the community in terms of not just the performers that you see on screen, but they also were involved in shaping the narrative and sort of determining the story that they wanted to tell with the director. So there was a unique creative process to it, but the sensory detail that comes across through the camera work, the sense of place, mm-hmm. the sense of time is really palpable. And as much as we can talk about the story of the film, it's that sensory experience that you have watching it that I think makes it truly special.
That's interesting. I spent some time in rural Arkansas, specifically Pine Bluff, several years ago.
Yeah.
And when you look out and you see the vastness of that state, especially, and I was specifically on black-owned farmland, it's almost a spiritual experience. So I get what you're saying. That resonates with me.
Yeah, and the backdrop, you know, it's a small town that is obviously, this is a story in 2017, but you feel the weight of history when you're looking at this town, because it's a town that suffered economic depression for many decades. So that's also another thing that is deeply felt when you watch this film.
Mm-hmm. Tell us about the filmmaker of the film. Pronounce the name, Aman
Abbasi, yeah. Mm-hmm. This is my first time encountering his work. This is his first feature film. Huh. He was known primarily as a musician prior to this.
Really?
Yeah. One point of reference for people who are, you know, cinephiles, would be the producer David Gordon Green, who has more recently been known for big budget films and comedies, including The Pineapple Express, among others. But his first film, George Washington, was in many ways similar to this. It was made with amateur or semi-pro performers. It had a mixture of sort of gritty realism and a bit of magical realism, and that's kind of the tone that we see in this film as well.
Mm. When you say that, it reminds me, I've not seen this film, so obviously I'm not comparing it on that level, but when you say that, it reminds me of the film
Beast of Southern Wild. That's not a bad point of comparison. I mean, both films are carried largely by young performers, and that's a definite common denominator. There's some commonality in the setting as well, but Davion is a little quieter. It's not, the magical realism elements are very subtle. And actually, magical realism is a better descriptor for George Washington, but the film that David Gordon Green directed. But it is, I think, a good point of reference as well for Davion.
Mm. So also, let's talk, I mean, this, to me, Eric, we've had several films come out that have been breathtaking, first-time filmmakers.
Yeah.
What the hell? What is going on, man? I mean, these guys are picking up, the men and women are picking it up and delivering just dynamic stories the first time out of the box. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, I think movies are catching up to other art forms like writing and music, because it's access to tools, you know.
That's a great point.
20 years ago, 30 years ago, there were economic barriers to telling stories. And it's not like it's cheap now, but it's come down in cost considerably. Most people carry in their pocket at least one tool with which they could make a film.
Truth, absolutely true, and that's a profound point, that access is allowing people to get their stories out in the most profound way, and just it's still breathtaking to see people just in the first shot just hit a home run.
Yeah, and you know, that's largely the focus of film festivals, and we're, you know, a year-round extension of the Maryland Film Festival's mission. So many, many of the films we show are from, you know, first-time, second-time feature directors.
It's a beautiful thing, man. It really is. What do we know about the stars of the film? Are they also new?
They're all, to the best of my knowledge, new to film, and there are some incredible performances to be found.
So again, this film, Davion, a coming-of-age film set in rural Arkansas, with tragic circumstances. This young man's older brother is he murdered?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That is what the essence of this film. Obviously, we don't want to give it away, but it's going to be in 2 weeks at the
Park. Yeah, it opens Friday the 15th of September.
Okay, very good. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to First Edition here on WEAA 88.9. I'm Sean Yeo, your host, editor of the Baltimore Afro-American newspaper. I'm in the studio with our friend Eric Hatch. He's director of programming at the Parkway Theater and the Maryland Film Festival. He's also a Baltimore filmmaker. We're talking about some of the films that are coming up at the Great Parkway Theater. We just finished talking about the film Davion, a new film, 2017 American drama, directed, first-time film by Aman Abbasi, written by Aman Abbasi as well. What have the reviews been like since it's open at the Sundance?
They've been really positive. I mean, I was reviewing them in preparation for this interview, and you know, the most general point of comparison is to this previous film, George Washington. But people do feel a fresh energy here, and I think a lot of people feel the spirit of collaboration between the director and the performers on screen. There's a really special dynamic there.
Before we go on to the next film, Rat Film, which is documentary, I have a phobia of rats.
Uh-oh.
but I wanted to see this film.
Yeah.
Because it just looks absolutely fascinating. But before we get to that, I just want to talk a little bit more about a theme that we've had during our conversations, Eric, but it's important to continue to reemphasize. The Parkway and the Maryland Film Festival, as much as any urban film festival or any of them across the country, because there are dozens, literally, really is embracing, not just embracing, I think diving headfirst into wanting to lift up films that are diverse in many, many ways, not just racially diverse, but in many ways, to the credit of the Maryland Film Festival and the Parkway. Again, for the listeners who have not heard our conversations before, talk about the importance of those that embrace.
Yeah, I mean, there's such a breadth of work happening right now. Voices that perhaps previously weren't able to express themselves on film are coming forward with amazing work. And typically, that's the domain of film festivals. You know, most of the corporate distribution in this country is Hollywood fare, and then there's also the art house circuit. But even within the art house circuit, there have been very noteworthy exceptions in the last year. But traditionally, you don't have a lot of black voices. You don't have a lot of female filmmakers. And film festivals are typically where that's corrected. And again, we're trying to give a film festival spirit year round. So when it comes to corporate distribution, if you see foreign films, they're typically from France or Germany. There's not perhaps Japan. There's not a ton of breadth there, but there's wonderful work being done all over the world.
Absolutely.
And we're trying to highlight that. I mean, we have a film called The Nile Hilton Incident opening this weekend that's a neo-noir set in Egypt. It's being compared to the film Chinatown.
Really?
And yeah, absolutely.
What's the name again?
It's called The Nile Hilton Incident.
The Nile Hilton Incident.
Yeah, wow. Yeah. It's a sort of dark police procedural set in Egypt. And, you know, that's typically every week we'll have films from a couple different countries on our slate. And September 15th, which is a big day for us, you know, that's the opening of Davion. It's the opening of Rat Film. We're also launching a multi-week retrospective of recent Latin American sort of visionary cinema. So we're going to be showing a dozen films from 10 different countries over a month starting September 15th.
Wow, so that's beautiful.
There's a lot happening.
There is absolutely a lot happening. And I'm so pleased that the Parkway has taken on this mission with the fervor that it's taken it
Thank
on.
Thank you.
The Nile Hilton incident, that sounds really fascinating, too.
Yeah, that's a cool film.
Let me mark that down.
Okay.
Something else that I wanted to touch on before we even get to Rat Film. To your point about embracing films beyond, foreign films beyond France or Germany or even Japan, the two largest studio producers, film producers in the world are India and Africa.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's literally a vast untapped resource as far as as far as American film houses is concerned.
Absolutely, yeah. That's very true. I mean, the Nigerian industry and the Indian industry are the two largest producers. U.S. and Japan are up there as well, but those are the big four, and those films rarely enter the marketplace. And I think, you know, they have different cinematic traditions, and that's part of the divide. I mean, however, in England and in a lot of European countries, you see Bollywood films having widespread distribution. And you have sort of working knowledge of who the stars are and what the major films are, and we don't really have that here. And I would like to bring some Bollywood to the Parkway. I mean, another thing that those films are known for is for their by our standards unconventional running time. Many of them are 3 hours, 3.5 hours.
That's so unconventional.
Can pose a little challenge for a programmer, but I love particularly 60s, 70s Bollywood film, and it really is a parallel cinema. I mean, most of the Indian films that we see in the U.S. are art house dramas, and that isn't the popular cinema in India. Mm-hmm. That's sort of an alternative cinema in India. You know, the 3 hour musicals tend to be the dominant popular fare there, and they're many of them are spectacular.
Indeed. The next film up for discussion is Rat Film. When I got the program to this year's film festival, I saw that I was like, there was a part of me yearning to see that film. There was another part of me like, no way, because I am absolutely afraid of rats. But it is it seems such a fascinating process.
Yeah.
It's a Baltimore film, right?
Yeah. The filmmaker Theo Anthony is a Baltimorean, and it was very much a Baltimore production. I mean, every image you see on screen is a Baltimore image. The soundtrack was by Baltimore musician Dan Deacon. So it's very much a local film that's making an international mark.
What I mean, obviously, it's a documentary.
Yeah.
But it is obviously about what it is. It's a rat film.
Yeah.
But it's more than that.
Yeah. It uses rats as the window in. And there are many threads through the film, but it looks at rat infestation in Baltimore, and it shows you people who love rats to keep them as pets, and it shows you people who are, you know, doing the city work to try to keep the streets clear of rats. But that's really the starting point for a film essay that looks at the history of Baltimore, looks at redlining, looks at segregation, looks at neighborhood resource allocation, and you know, it's a window in to a much deeper investigation to our city.
To that point, and I'm going to bring this up as a compare and contrast. I mean, Baltimore has had its issue with rats for decades.
Mm-hmm.
I lived in L.A. for several years on and off, and I lived in West L.A., close to Beverly Hills. I worked in Beverly Hills. And I remember I would walk through Beverly Hills and walk down the alleys and never saw a rat in Beverly Hills. Never saw a rat in Beverly Hills.
Yeah.
And one night I was flying out of L.A. to or picking up a friend from the airport. I can't remember which one it was, or from the bus station. I can't remember. And I was downtown. And Eric, I swear to you, bro, I saw 70 rats in one alley,
wow,
just running wild.
Yeah,
and
swarm.
So the disparity between rat infestation in downtown L.A., an area that obviously, for people who don't know, a lot of poverty in south downtown L.A., and then obviously the opulence of Beverly Hills, which was free of rats, is something that can be transferred, a message or a narrative that can be transferred to Baltimore as well.
No, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, this film is a really deep investigation of issues like that, of disparity, of the history of segregation in the town. And it's a really timely film. I mean, given the backdrop we've had the last couple weeks of the removal of Confederate monuments and
sure,
stuff, I think that there's a moment of discussion and reflection in Baltimore like few others. And this is a great film to sort of deepen that conversation.
So tell us about the filmmaker, the Baltimore, the filmmaker of this documentary?
Yeah, Theo Anthony. He's a young voice in Baltimore film that is getting world renowned. I mean, he has studied under Werner Herzog. He was named by Filmmaker Magazine one of the 25 new faces to watch.
Excellent.
So, he's a major talent, but a homegrown talent as well. Mm.
It's always exciting when you have homegrown talent and the film. I mean, the fact that it's resonated the way it has and found an international audience. It's a rare thing, but it's why do you think this film in particular has found that international audience?
Well, I think that people have an appetite for images of Baltimore never before in history, and I think things like The Wire and 12 O'Clock Boys kind of set this film up to be the next in that succession of discussion of sort of urban issues in Baltimore, and I think this is a really special film. It's multi-layered and keeps people engaged. So every person who sees that film is going to come out wanting to talk about it with somebody else and tell their friends about it.
I tell you, it's exciting, man. The fact that the Parkway can show films year-round now, great films, great avant-garde films, independent films. It's the lifeblood of the industry, and exciting times here. And I mean, I believe this, but I'll ask your professional opinion. Baltimore is becoming a leader in America as far as independent film showing in this country. That has to be true.
Yeah, I believe that as well. I mean, right now this week, ending Thursday, but we've been running for the past week, two feature films by another Baltimorean, Stephanie Barber. Her films, Daredevils, which isn't a Marvel movie, and In the Jungle, which are two experimental feature films. And I think if we talk about Theo Anthony and we talk about Stephanie together, the common thread is Baltimore is becoming known for not just film, but very specific, like film essays, documentaries, experimental work, animated work. I mean, it might not be a center of Hollywood-type storytelling. It's a center of really incisive alternative storytelling and meditative filmmaking.
Fascinating. So tell us again the dates for Davion and Rat Film and the other films that are showing.
Almost everything I mentioned opens 9/15. Rat Film, Davion, and that's the launch of our Latin American Visionary Cinema series, which is 2 to 3 films from different countries each week for a month.
Mm-hmm.
But I also, you know, plugged the Nile Hilton incident.
Yeah.
That opens this Friday. And Stephanie's films, Daredevils and In the Jungle, play through Thursday.
Okay. And again, this is at the Parkway Theater on North Avenue, down the street from the legendary O'Dell's. And for people who want who need information, who want specific information, what's the website?
Yeah, it's mdfilmfest.com. We're a year-round extension of Maryland Film Festival's programming mission.
All right. Eric Hatch is director of programming for Parkway Theater and the Maryland Film Festival. Eric, always a pleasure, man. Thank you for coming.
Much for having me back. I appreciate
absolutely,
it.
Absolutely. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about another film, The Legend of Kung Funk, by the filmmaker's name is Marco Johnson. He's a martial arts instructor and filmmaker and actor. This film is being shot in the Baltimore area. We'll talk to him coming up. Stay tuned. You're listening to First Edition. First Edition here on WEAA 88.9, winding down a Tuesday evening. I'm Sean Yost, your host, editor of the Baltimore Afro-American newspaper, and we continue our conversation about films, Baltimore films, avant-garde films, independent films, and we move to The Legend of Kung Funk. And the main man is in the studio. He is the producer. He's the actor. He's a community activist and a martial artist. Marco the Answer Johnson is with me in the studio. Marco, good to see you, brother.
Good to see you too, Mr. Sean.
Man,
sir.
Take the Mr. off.
All right, I got you, Sean.
Take the Mr. off. Just call me Sean.
How you feeling, Sean?
I feel good, brother. I feel good, man. This looks. First of all, congratulations in coming forward and getting your film out there. Number one,
Yes, sir.
It's a blessing, and it's not an easy task. But you're doing it, so you're filming The Legend of Kung Funk now. You're doing it now.
We're actually done.
You're finished.
We're finished. We're in the editing stages now.
Okay.
More the approach for the movie, what I did was is like an album. It's like this is my LP.
Okay.
I've done a lot of little mixtape stuff. I've been in films since a kid. So we're actually just finishing up to make it wholesome.
Okay.
A lot of action films you see now are not wholesome enough where we can relate to Baltimore, like, you know, where we from, you know, the slums, the grimy parts, but also had the essence of that martial arts, that guy you wouldn't even imagine that can run up the wall doing backflips with no wires, no tricks, no flips, just straight martial arts, kung fu flicks.
All right. So this is a film about martial arts, about kung fu.
Yes, sir.
A classic kung fu film, pretty much. Old school style kung fu film starring you, and your dad is in this too.
Yeah, my dad is actually the choreographer.
For the film.
Yeah, he did. Right. For me, this was both of our debuts differently.
Mm-hmm.
Me actually taking a character that I used to watch all the time, I still watch today, Anton Jackson from A Living Color.
Okay, right.
And saying, hey, every time we look at a hero, he's a secret agent. He is a clean cut guy. All the roles I've played, you know, previous years with the Beast movie I've done last year, Chronicles of Parker, those two movies I did, I was like an agent. And mm-hmm. I said, man, I want to do something different to show my personality, mm-hmm. that I'm funny and that a mom, a dad, a grandma could be like, oh, my God, that he's hilarious. But at the same time, a three-year-old can see it and think he's watching Ninja Turtles.
Right.
But it's, you know, we see him every day here in Baltimore with the, you know, homeless guys.
Right.
So making him a hero, you know, looking at him a little different.
Right.
Because when you look at the homeless guys we have around in Baltimore, it's funny. One of the guys I met studying to get ready for the film, he's a professor. And what he taught me, he was just like, it's not that you choose to be homeless. It's that whatever's in your mind that you lost, you're looking for it every day.
Wow.
So in the film, it allowed me to embrace it through the fight scenes. I mean, I dislocated both of my knees through the film,
really?
My elbows. I mean, we did in one day, we probably filmed 6 fight scenes back to back, me fighting multiple of 7 to 6 to 5 people. No, that first day I didn't fight, but not one person at all.
So obviously you weren't dealing with no stuntmen. You were doing your own thing.
And that's my main thing, to be, I ain't going to say the black Jackie Chan, but I realize every day when I get up what my skin color is. So to give us a new outlook, to not always be like, oh, yeah, he's going to be that guy. He's going to be Michael Jai White or Wesley Snipes. No, like, the guy that's going to slide out and make you laugh. And the be wholesome with the kids, because I've been doing martial arts all my life. My dad's been my teacher. So when it came to a choice of what do you want to do, I said I want to be a martial arts entertainer. So
that's cool.
Thank you, sir.
I'm going to talk about the film in depth in a minute, but I want to talk about your upbringing and learning martial arts from your father and what that's been like, the father-son relationship, because that's obviously really important,
yeah,
a big part
man.
Of your life. Let's talk about that.
Growing up, just martial arts has been my life, you know. I didn't do anything else. I played sports here and there, basketball, football, you good. But martial arts, competing all around the world. I'm a 5-time world champion. My dad's a 7-time world champion. My stepmom is a 2-time Olympic gold medalist and a 3-time world champion.
Wow, wow.
And it's just the lineage of martial arts has been in us. I've competed on sports karate. I've been on ESPN. When I was 11, I was on a show called WMAC Masters. They used to come on Fox right after Power Rangers. And I played myself. My dad was a recurring character, but it was an episode where it highlighted how he taught me, how he passed the lineage of the torch of martial arts to me. So just coming up and you meeting Shannon Lee on the TV show, you're meeting the stunt guys for Jackie Chan and all these guys now, and they are in Marvel movies. I grew up with these kids, like beating them at tournaments and us cutting a bobo and tricking together. And I always was different, and I never could get it. Like, man, why don't I, you know, because this is the way my dad trained me, getting up 6 a.m. and didn't have to be to school till like 9, but we up 6, sometimes 5, sometimes 4. And the blizzard of 95, we were running in it. Everybody else is in the house, you know, eating. We running in the blizzard. Because my dad coming home from prison being a recovering addict, my mom being a recovering addict. I'm Baltimore. Like, everything that's going on now to what we see, I'm the city. And I seen it. So in martial arts, that's how I expressed it. When I went to a tournament, I was Lafayette Projects. That was me.
I was
the 125 building when we climbed to the top of the stairs and
Lafayette Court.
Yeah, we trying to flip down the steps, and that was what my dad taught me.
Wow.
Not in China.
Right,
it wasn't.
Right, right.
It was embracing Kung Fu in its essence in the city, in here. So going through black belt, it took me 12 years to get my first black belt. And it could easy. When I see kids get it in 4 years or 3 years, I knew what it took me that long, because it was for me to be a complete martial artist. Some people are martial artists and you good, but my dad's one thing he always taught me is that somebody can entertain you with martial arts. They can perform it. They can be a flipper, a tricker, or all that good stuff. Or you can have a good teacher, the person that could teach you real good, but he can't physically do it. And then you have the entertainment side, where it's the movies and it's the spectacle, it's the plays, it's taking martial arts action and putting it in front of people. And that's what he bred me from birth to now to do. And I just felt like doing films and doing it my way. You know, not saying that everybody else way, I won't do it nobody else way, because I worked on Luke Cage last year and it was a great experience.
Cool.
But it was doing it my way. Sometimes you, I see stories, and when you see a story, we're not that, we're amongst the heroes. I wanted to be the hero.
Right.
You know, I don't want to be the stunt man. My goal was to be the star. Because you, we take actors or we take rappers and we make them action stars. You never go back to back in the day when you went, you had Billy Blanks and he was blockbuster movie. He had a movie out every week. That was his thing. Right. You know, you embraced the culture back then. And it's, and that's for me. The, I don't want the A level. I tell people that all the time. I'm good with the C and the B level. Because the C and the B level, that means that I can go teach a kid how to break into films his own way. He might not be a martial arts star. But he might want to do stunts. He might want to, you know, direct.
That's interesting, man. I mean, it's to take the thing that you love and define an avenue for you to get into this other thing that you love, film. that's a beautiful thing, man. And that's what, I mean, truth be told, regardless of what people are doing in their lives, all anybody really wants to do is to do the thing that they love.
Yes, sir.
Really. Whether they can do it or not is another story. That's another conversation. But that's what everybody deep down in their heart wants to do, the thing that they love. And for you to be able to do that, man, that's beautiful. And I'm interested in what you said about how you take Baltimore with you, or how you've taken Baltimore with you as you've traveled around the world touring and performing and fighting. Talk about people's reaction to you being a straight up Baltimore guy. I mean, what's that been like?
You just gotta. It's, I take it with a grain of salt. It's hard to rub on people because coming from, you know, a little backdrop of my story. My dad, you know, took custody of me when I was 9 years old. Mm-hmm. I was abandoned in the house for 3 months. Mm-hmm. You know, you go through things. Basically raised myself. So when my dad took me, it was like a militant type thing. So when I would come in and I'm around, you know, little white kids and Chinese kids, I talk different. Mm-hmm. I'm like, yo, what up, yo? Mm-hmm. What's good, Eric? They like, huh? So it was different to them. So I then had to reform and listen to, you know, it was like studying again. Like, I had to listen to how their lingo and mix it how I talk.
Right.
So when I went to a tournament and I wore my Timbs or I wore the hoodie and other guys were all prepped up, they had the suits, I still would be accepted for who I was when I walked in there because I'm going off of what I seen in the city, like what I grew up around, the hustlers, the, you know, that's what I embraced, the street life.
Yeah.
That was my heroes. That were the people that, because they was the ones that, when we had a basketball game or a football game, would come in and embrace us. You know, what we'd be flipping, they would come in and give us a couple dollars.
Right, right.
So you would, you embrace them differently. So for me, when I went there, it rubbed them wrong. I would use rap music. But my dad opened it up for me because when he was competing, he used a little bit of Snoop and Hawaii Five-0. But I just said, nah, I'm gonna break the mold. I'm just straight my city. Like, I wanna represent my culture. And it wasn't really, when I really started to get older, I realized it wasn't just my city, it was the culture.
Right, right.
It was the urban culture we come from.
A specific culture in Baltimore.
Yeah. And it's so, and when you come to Baltimore, it's everything. Everybody don't know that. It's like when you over here, you in little Italy, it's like you been in New York. You over here on North and Pratt, it's like you been in another part of the world, and you gotta adapt because you can't be from West End from East End, think you getting down on both sides the same way. It gotta be a respect. You gotta have a respect factor there on the same time. But for me, it was like, how do I embrace that and be able to adapt? Because I was homeless. Being homeless, I couldn't be homeless in my city. Because to me, my city was, I was a hero. My father was a hero. He was like the man. Like, he was the first black guy to be doing martial arts out of Baltimore and kung fu at that. I mean, kung fu and learning from some of the greatest martial artists, Garcia Davis from Baltimore.
I was waiting for you to mention that name.
Master Garcia Davis. And he paved the way. He let me do my first commercial when I was a kid. Like, he was the one when I went and I won the bikes, the mountain bikes at his tournament, sort of. PlayStation 2s and 3s. That was my first given to go out and say, all right, I'm going to go to Trinidad and see try my hand at 17 and bring home 5 gold medals. And we fighting soldiers. We're competing against soldiers. Like, you get off the plane, they got guns. And those same guys were the same guys that represented their country against 35 other countries.
Wow.
So it just... Master Garcia Davis, like, no, I say, man. Him,
he's everybody knows Garcia. Everybody knows Garcia. There's no doubt about that.
Yes, sir.
Wow. So let's talk about this film, The Legend of Kung Funk. It sounds fascinating. And the subtitle, The Legend of Kung Funk, I Go Hard for My City. That's the essence of what you just said, though, brother, for real.
I mean, sir.
That's what you represent.
Thank you, when you're
discussing your thing. How did you specifically decide on this narrative? Did you write this too?
Yes, it was my story. Like I said, I was homeless. Mm-hmm. And each part of me being homeless is going to be a different movie. And this was the part of me being homeless and trying to still embrace martial arts and still try to stay conscious. You know, you have something based on a true story, but it was just like, man, how when I was homeless and I hate Panera Bread now because the manager at Panera Bread made sure at 9 o'clock every night that she had food out there for me. Like whatever they was throwing away. And I would go to clubs and battle in Philly with martial arts and hip hop. And I didn't have new clothes, so I would take the same clothes I had on all week and just might get a couple dollars that night and go wash them in the laundromat and go battle. And I would win. So when I said, man, let me take a story. Let me stop doing everybody else's story. Let me do my story. Because some little kid right now might be doing it, going through the same story.
Well, they are. And if you look, all you have to do is travel through the streets of Baltimore and see that the number of people who are experiencing homelessness is multiplied tremendously over the last just few years.
Yes, sir.
And something that was brought to my attention is that we have a growing number of college students who are homeless.
Yes, yes.
So that speaks to what you're saying, that you pursuing what you love despite experiencing homelessness. That's literally the love and the passion for it.
Yes,
right?
Sir. Yes, sir. It's just because that's all you had when you being. My dad was homeless, so me to be homeless myself, and you know you make the wrong decisions because your parents give you certain things that you gotta embrace, but you gotta learn it on your own.
Right.
I ain't saying everybody need to go through homeless, but sometimes you need to get in a room, take away everything you have, take everything away you have, meditate, and see what you want. Because that's how I got to this point now where it's like every day I get up, I'm living my dream. Nobody's working harder than me in the game. I could put a quote up and say, hey, whoever your number one, tell him I'm coming for him because he's not working like I'm working right now. And that's... because my city showed me that. We ain't ever have a basketball team. It was Dunbar. It was Dunbar. All the NBA legends from Dunbar was the ones we seen. You know, the wrestling champs, Muggsy Bowles, Lump Lump. All those guys that, and like I say, it's just, for me, everything is about Baltimore. When I do it, it's for Baltimore for me. Like, I don't want it no other way. If I get Tom Cruise or whatever stage one day.
Right.
And for me, it's Kevin Hart. I embrace what Kevin Hart did, but I want the martial arts action lane. But if I ever get to that stage, they can't keep me out of the city with these kids.
That's a beautiful thing, man. So let's talk a little bit more, though, about the film process. I mean, how did you actually go about putting the film together?
I had a writer sit down and take my story and spin it off. And it was actually created in 2014 when we did it. Me and my dad sat on the phone a couple times a night and created a short and came back. I did a couple movies, had a couple falling outs. You have your goods, your ups, your downs. But I learned how to do film, being on these films, filming for 14 hours straight in the two films I did. No breaks. Doing all my own stunts, knees, dislocating knees, elbows, different things. Like, you experience when you go home and you got to take ice baths.
That's
so
right.
I said, let me take that instead of giving it to everybody else and do it for myself. But me and AJ and me sitting down with him and he said, man, you need this, 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 and that. And I'm like, man, dang, I can't do this.
And AJ is a filmmaker from Morgan State University.
Yes, from Morgan State. And he said, you can't do it like that. You need this, this, and that. And I didn't talk to him for 3 months. It wasn't that I was mad. It's that how I am, I can show you better than I can tell you. Mm-hmm. So I went and I got a writer. Got the writer to write the film, and his name is Gerald Lima from Florida. Now he's in South Carolina from Lima Films. He sat down and wrote the film for me. Said, "I'll collab. I'll do this with you." I didn't contact my dad yet. I got my cast because everybody's like, "Oh, you got to do a casting call." I said, "No, I got connections. I've been in martial arts all my life. People want to work and want to deliver a message. And if we can deliver a message and show the city, my city, people will want to do it." So everybody said they signed on. Say, "Hey, I got it." Then I went to my dad and I said, "Dad, I want you to coordinate. I want you to do the choreography of this movie." Mm-hmm. And when we did it, it was the most strenuous process I've ever been a part of.
Really?
I did martial arts all my life. I can knock out 1,000 kicks right now in 10 minutes. Give me 10 minutes, I can knock out 1,000 kicks, probably less. But that process was the most strenuous process I've ever done.
I told somebody years ago that working on films, doing film work is like doing construction.
Yes.
It ain't no joke. People think it's glamorous. There's nothing when you actually doing it and you're hauling the equipment, you're doing and you taking take over and over and over again. It ain't no joke.
And especially to me, the acting part was my biggest fear. I can do action all day, but when I'm like a machine when it comes to martial arts because my dad's always trained. Getting up 6 o'clock in the morning, you running in a blizzard, like you could do a lot of stuff. And I don't say that, but to hear the guy's like, "Man, you like a machine." But when you're getting older, your body start breaking down.
Yeah, brother, tell me about it.
So what I was doing at 20 and now doing at 33, Jackie Chan might have done it, but I'm doing stuff that he wasn't doing in that era then. With no wires. Yeah. So I'm running up the wall and we don't have a jib. And he might have did it then, but it was different. He wasn't spinning and twisting. So it was a lot. It was a great experience, but it was the most strenuous process. Yeah, I mean, strenuous.
So talk about, you said the process of actually embracing the acting. How did you get into that?
Just remember when I was going to Panera Bread, going to the clubs and battling. And just remembering when you live in an apartment, been plenty of times where I ain't had no lights. So I remember those times, how you had to live, mm-hmm. how you had to live hand to mouth. Or I just went past and just started not, when people walk past the homeless people, I stopped walking past them. Gave them a chance, "How your day doing?" "Yeah, man, it's like this." So how he explained his day is how I reacted in the movie. Mm-hmm. So it just gave me my personality. So I might have been the guy Rick I met 3 months ago from an experience in the film. Mm-hmm. So it just, and then studying Anton Jackson, he was like funny. It was like, oh, how can you keep it funny? But still like, man, he is homeless though. Like he is suffering from what most people suffer from when you're homeless. The drugs or depression. Alcoholism, like that takes a hold on you. Because his one biggest thing is he's a master of drunken style. Because when he loses his family, he can't embrace it to face it. Because every night he dreams. Mm. He replays the stories that took everything away from him. Mm. So it then gets into the part where he becomes a hero. But like I said, it's those culture stories that kids used to miss. The drunken masters, when you get to watch Black Belt Theater, and I say, let's embrace both cultures. Let's take what really goes on reality base with a classical hero and put them together.
The film is done.
Done.
Edited.
We're at that final one day, about to enter it into the Urban Action Film Festival stages, but it's filmed, done, edited. We're about to drop it on Facebook. As we speak, as we talking now, we haven't even dropped it. Everything is because you're our first interview. You're our first everything. Like I said, I want to give
it. I feel honored for that.
I said everything has to be for the city first. Like anything I do outside of this is cool, but I want to give back to. How can I can go show this movie in New York and at the Urban Action at the AMC theaters, HBO, and it's great. You know, we hopefully because I don't like losing. So hopefully, God's willing, we win. But if I don't win in my city first, then I'm not winning. So everything is actually premiering today. As we speak, as we we wrap up today, we're gonna be dropping everything so the world can see what we have.
That's dope. So, but you said earlier that it sounds like it's gonna be multiple films on the same narrative.
Yes.
About that a little bit.
Now we want to get into the story of who the character Kevin is, how he learns the style, how he embraces the drunken master style. So we're in that process of just getting that first one out. Mm-hmm. And that's what AJ tells me every time, man. Yeah, we're going to do second one. We're going to do the third one. But that first one, to me, if I can make a stamp where everybody can understand that first one, then one, two, and three is going to be easy, because my thing is one, two, and three, this is going to piece together to be a full movie. So when everybody sits down and watches it, you're going to be like, wow, ho. First one you put out connects to the second one, then the third one, but it's just one full movie. And I realized the process of doing that is like releasing your tracks. You don't want to put every track out.
Mm-hmm.
If you got 30 tracks, you're only going to probably put out 10. And they're going to probably be 9 you don't like, one that you really in love with.
Mm-hmm.
And like for me, after filming the film and you look and you looking at the edits, you're like, man, I should have did this, or I could have did that. I should have ran up the wall and did that move.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it's like, all right, now I just want you allow the process to happen. So my goal is I got to make today better than yesterday. So hopefully we can get 1, 2, and 3 done and we keep it going to make it one full movie.
Mm-hmm. That's an interesting concept because typically, I mean, I've been watching. My family will tell you I've been watching the Batman trilogy over and over and over and over again. that's obviously one of my favorite characters, one of my favorite films.
Yes.
But in that tradition, I mean, you're embracing the hero character as well.
Yes.
And specifically touching upon the narratives that are connected to Baltimore authentically. You know what I'm saying? So that's really fascinating to
yes.
me.
So how do
you see part 2 and part 3 playing out? I hear what you say. It's basically one full film.
Mm-hmm.
But how do you see it play out, and when are you going to begin the second part?
Our goal is to, after the urban action in November, my team's goal is to do it and start pushing the film, the second part, in December. My writer already told me I can't see the second film until urban action's over. He's like, no, you're doing too much. Let's get this done, because we're actually gonna do a live action sequence in New Jersey at the Newark Film Festival.
Okay.
Next week. So just giving people different embrace. Like I said, I embrace all cultures. I took Tony Jaa and I took this and put it together. But the whole thing with part two is to build more on the story. Now you got to take the homeless guy that found his daughter. Or found whatever narrative that he lost in his life, in his mind, wherever he lost that narrative in his mind, he keeps on retracking it every day, and he's thinking this little girl is his daughter. Like, yeah, I feel like this little girl is my daughter. How do you build that relationship further beyond just the martial arts? Because now you got to build into the people.
Right, right.
The first one for us now was, yeah, we have the story. You giving a great punchline. It's good. It's some good acting. It's this, but the martial arts is what puts that icing all around the cake.
Drives it.
Yeah. Now we get into the story part where, what is it about drunken style that embraces this guy? How did he learn the art? And what does he do on that time when he's not asleep? How did he get to this point? So it's like really for us now building on the characters, giving them everybody that full story. Because when you see films come out and they're great, you get that little bit. But what made us tune into The Dark Knight was the first one.
No truth.
Was like the second one. And then he just got darker. And then he had to get darker. And then to the point where he got so dark that he had to vanish.
Well, that's true. That's actually true. He did have to vanish. And he retired. He got out.
He was out.
Exactly. How can people see this film, man?
We got a Facebook, The Legend of Kung Funk on Facebook. We have the Instagram coming, The Legend of Kung Funk on Instagram. YouTube, we will have, you can YouTube The Legend of Kung Funk after when the trailer drops today. We're going to do it around 7:30 today.
Okay, so in about 90 minutes.
90 minutes.
No, 7:30, it has a half an hour.
Half an hour. Yeah. Half an hour, we're going to drop it today at 7:30. So just tuning in, Legend of Kung Funk, hashtag Legend of Kung Funk. I'm put on for my city, everything, your boy The Answer. If you hashtag those, you'll be able to find them on Instagram, Facebook. You can follow me on Facebook, Instagram, Marco The Answer Johnson. You'll see everything, body of work of this film. It's damn near everybody to realize that we have heroes here. And it's not just for me. It's the people you walk around and you see every day.
The film is The Legend of Kung Funk. I go hard for my man behind it. The force behind it is Marco The Answer Johnson. Brother, I'm happy, man. And I pray all the best for you. Everything. Every great thing God has for you, man. I hope you get it.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for joining us. We appreciate it. And we appreciate you, our listeners, as well. That's it for us. That's it for First Edition. It is a production of WEAA. The show is produced by executive producer Sean Yost, associate producer Iorio Digizua. Our board operators are Andre Melton and Ty Rice. First Edition interns are Isaiah George, Wyman Jones, and Alex Blanc. Stay tuned for Wealthy Radio with Deborah Owens next right here on Public Radio WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. I'm Sean Yost. Peace.